I'm Paul Reichlin, Director of Digital Platforms at PNNL.
Okay, and Director of Digital Platforms. Let's begin with a definition. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is basically stewarding, taking care of all the business systems that operate the laboratory. So this is on the business side, mission support side of what we do.
Maybe give us a sense of the scope of the mission applications, what it is that you have to oversee.
Yeah, so from a business application perspective, we have everything from finance to HR systems to custom-built software to address, facilities and asset capabilities, as well as internal, CIT or informational applications. So it's a broad range.
About how many applications do you think is in the portfolio? Just rough number.
Yeah, we just have about 180 business applications or so.
Okay, well, that's not as many as, say, Veterans Affairs Department, which has about 600. So you're ahead of the game there. And how many people do you serve with these applications?
We have about 6,500 people at PNNL.
Okay. And like so many agencies, are you going through the whole modernization structure and trying to develop new, I don't know, customer experience types of things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a number of efforts where we're building out kind of brand new digital platforms from scratch, kind of reimagining the business applications as they have a fair amount of disparate systems built over time. And as we rethink those, we're looking at our users, we're studying how they do things, we bring them into the process and then reimagine what those products can be. So we're really building from the ground up at that point.
Does that mean replacement of legacy code or just putting a new front end on it and still using the legacy code? There's lots of paths to this.
Yes, there's definitely multiple approaches. We have, larger investments where we're thinking about replacing the entire stack from adding in more modern technologies and platforms to also just swapping out certain technologies that have become outdated, like authentication or maybe even updating the user experience. So it does range in terms of the types of changes we make.
And tell us about the development methodologies, that is contractor versus employees, if that applies, and how you go about development. There's lots of methodologies, the DevSecOps approach, and so on.
Yeah, well, we've been using Agile Scrum development methodology for some time now. And those are the iterating in short cycles, 2 week cycles, where you can build, develop, and release code within a very short amount of time. We're focused on stable teams. This allows us to build expertise, domain experience, stability for the team. So we bring the work to the teams. And we've also augmented our staff at times with contractors to help us in surge capacity, things like that.
So it's mostly in-house then, augmented by contractors.
Periodically, yeah, mostly in-house staff. And we use DevOps methodologies to help ensure we've got a continuous learning and continuous improvement environment as we go. So when you talk about CI/CD pipelines, that's been instrumental. And that's where you start to incorporate a lot of automation in order to move rapidly.
Got it. And what are the languages? What's the code base that you're dealing with as you modernize?
A fair amount of our custom software is based in kind of the Microsoft ecosystem of .NET
Okay.
and React.
Got it. All right. And let's talk about testing then, which is our main point. What's your testing regime generally? And then we'll talk about it, throughout the life cycle of software.
Sure. Well, we definitely have taken the common approach of moving a lot of testing left in the process. So the more we can move it into the development process, the build processes, so we get that fast feedback. So that incorporates unit tests and then integration tests and automated functional tests. And then more as we get further in the process, that's where you add the manual testing and the user acceptance testing that have been more traditional in our software development.
And in that moving left, that is during coding and so forth, and How does that work in conjunction with the people doing the coding?
Well, first of all, you know, with when you're starting new, you can do a lot with the code in terms of making it more modular and testable from a unit test perspective. This is really building very lightweight tests to test very small increments. That allows us to code confidently, right? Because you have those tests to let you know if you broke something. And I think that's been a key, that's a key element in the ability to automate, move faster, and release more frequently.
And do you also test then when that new tested code gets added into the larger program as you build modularly? That's when.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. These just, you do have to do some maintenance, but yeah, these get incorporated into your build process. So as you continue to grow the application, those tests run with every build process and give you that fast feedback that you need in order to move confidently to the next phase.
And when you talk about testing for performance, what does that mean? What are some of the metrics and how do you measure it?
Yeah, so performance is sometimes subjective, right? So if you are getting into a situation where you have a specific requirement, you can use tools to test the response time and you can aggregate on average, things like that, to give you an idea of how your testing is working out in terms of downstream dependencies and delays in your system. So having good monitoring is really key, so you can do some analysis when needed.
Yeah, that downstream testing is important because eventually applications have to interact with data and databases, and that can introduce lots of issues. Fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think it's important to have good test data sets. You know, you have to look at what you can test in terms of interfaces and having either a mock or a stub to kind of mimic a downstream dependency. So that allows you to automate and move quickly. But then as you move towards a final release or getting ready to release, you have to integrate those back with like systems in your test environment or QA environment.
So a stub makes it a little easier and faster than to test that database interaction, for example?
Yeah, it certainly reduces the risk that you're going to find a big issue downstream.
Sure.
And of course, you can automate against that stub a lot easier. You don't have to worry about the data impacts and curating your data set so that it accommodates every test when you rerun it.
And in the customer experience realm, then you're dealing pretty much with web pages, and that's always fun to measure too.
Sure. Yeah, that's primarily you can look at the response time, the load times, and kind of take a snapshot of how those are ending up. Your users will tell you too.
Sure.
If you have acceptance testing, your functional testers will let you know if things are slow.
And maybe talk about some of the testing tools that you employ. Are they homegrown or do you use commercial products or maybe a combination of both?
Yeah, certainly a combination. So if you have a lot of the development platforms supply testing capabilities, we might also use for functional testing, use a commercial product for that. So you can write automated functional tests and script those. And so the important thing is trying to standardize a bit. So as you move from team to team, you've got common practices and you can learn together on those.
Right. And getting back to the idea of modernization and integration of modernized functionality with legacy code, that's an area that can really get complicated and a lot of projects kind of slow down at that point. How do you deal with that one?
Yeah, so if you're uplifting a legacy product and you're making some changes to it to modernize, the goal is obviously to make those underneath changes without your users knowing. And so that requires some analysis. A lot of times the legacy systems don't come with a lot of documentation, or they're coded using maybe older techniques and practices, which don't allow you to write those unit tests in an efficient manner. And so you have to come up with different techniques or spend more time on the analysis side to make sure you know what the software is doing. So you can write acceptance tests and functional tests to make sure you didn't break anything.
Right. And I bet in some cases you find that a lot of code probably isn't really needed in the modernized environment. And sometimes testing and functionality testing in particular, logic testing, you might find, and you tell me if this is true, geez, half this code we don't need to move forward.
Yeah, I think you have to pick and choose which opportunities you have to modernize that code base. Sometimes refactoring all of the code can add some risk to your project. So you really have to be upfront, deliberate, and transparent about what changes you're going to be making and taking on. Sometimes you can find yourself in a bit of a challenge if you start rewriting code without the rest of the group knowing. And that really can delay your project if it's not part of your strategy and plan.
And what's your cloud strategy? How much of this is going on in the cloud? How much is hosted in the cloud? Or how much do you still use PNNL facilities?
We have about 95% of our applications hosted in the cloud. And that's a combination of internally developed software, commercial products, and SaaS, and no-code, low-code.
Right. So does the cloud, the fact of the cloud, introduce testing issues?
Well, it depends if some of those are third parties, your dependencies. In some cases, if you're just running on a virtual machine, it's very similar to an on-prem experience, just in a different location. But if you're using some of the cloud services to build your application, there's some advantages and disadvantages that you have to be aware of. And also with your third parties, SaaS products, that's going to incorporate new challenges as they can make changes rapidly as well.
I wanted to probe that idea of the cloud-based, well, they're all cloud-based, software as a service offerings. I mean, by definition, they're cloud-based. And one thing we hear a lot is that they get to push patches, because that's one of the features of cloud-hosted SaaS offerings, is you're always up to date. You don't have to update it. They do. But then they push these updates, and that can break things. Do you find that's the case? And does your testing regime extend somehow to making sure that things stay operational when there's an update?
Yeah, it can really depend. It depends on the service that's being provided. If it's commonly deployed to many, many customers outside of your own organization, there's lots of techniques the third party will take to ensure the risk of those changes are low. Plus, you have the advantage of many other people using that software. If they're really building a lot of custom capabilities for your organization, you really have to partner closely. And that means possibly having a shared test environment where you can test those changes on the cadence that both parties agree to. Sometimes you can apply patches to your local cloud environment and test them at your leisure to apply those, but you do have to stay up to date to a certain level in order to remain in compliance there. But I think there's a lot of different strategies to apply depending on the dependency and the rate of change and the types of changes that are being deployed.
And you mentioned earlier the use of cloud services, commercial cloud services provided services, and
right,
those can introduce complexities into the software you put there if you use those services. So do you find that maybe over time it's best to standardize on what services you offer from the cloud so that the development teams can take that into account, that service is going to be there, whatever it might be, and therefore you program in such a way as to optimize the use of that service?
Yeah, I think having a service catalog, understanding what services you're going to adopt as an organization, and then building patterns and practices that are standard from the beginning. And, there's a lot of change going on in the environment, and that's a lot to learn for software engineers. And so you have to be very cognizant of how many of those new services you introduce into your development process. It has to be pretty methodical. You have to evaluate which services are right for your business needs. And then certainly using some of those modern capabilities allows you to take advantage of some new techniques, which makes the development experience much better.
And how does that go down with the coders? Are they okay with that? Because they're kind of an independent bunch sometimes.
Well, that's right, because some of the capabilities actually it breeds more independence because they're able to deploy their code more independently than before. It takes a lot of the manual handoffs out of the process if you partner well with your operations team. There's also just making sure you have the right monitoring of those underlying platforms so you understand the health, capacity, and scalability that you're deploying with your application.
Yes, because we talked about functionality, but there's also performance and scalability. And performance, I guess we mentioned in terms of response times, but as things scale, the math changes a little bit, and you get different effects that you might not have anticipated at the test level. Does the testing keep on as things scale? Do you have a regime to track the scaling and test for it?
Yeah, specific for testing, I think it's important to have a load test capability. And that's one of the advantages of going into the cloud is that they provide those services for you. So you don't have to manage a lot of the infrastructure, the setup. You can just hook into the service, run your test, get your metrics, and then you typically pay as you go, which allows you to take advantage of some long-term cost benefits.
And on that idea of testing and moving it to the left, how do the users come into this at all? Because the idea of the scrum and the short-term development is that you're getting feedback constantly from users. Is there a connection between that and the quality testing and testing for performance?
Yeah, I think it's important to always have the users in mind, even in the design or reimagining phase. You want to understand how they do work so you're building the right solutions, but more in the testing phase of the sprint cycles, which are 2 week cycles, you can leverage the typical ceremonies of Scrum, like demos, to bring the customer or subject matter expert into the team to walk through the code and making sure it's not only functionally correct, but also fit for use. It allows you to make some changes if you have to, if you've missed something in your design approach.
Yeah, functionality, I mean, is what users care about first and then care about performance, fair to say.
It depends. If it's too slow, it becomes the big elephant in the room, and you've got to address that. If it's fairly subtle and that the pages are moving and the functionality is working smoothly, yeah, the functionality is top of mind.
And sometimes performance problems can be caused by a factor, say, other than the coding, other than some API issue, but with maybe the infrastructure itself, some network effect. Are you able to detect when that's the case and say, well, no, that's an infrastructure issue and not a code issue?
Yeah, applying that monitoring that I may have mentioned earlier, the monitoring is really key so that you can diagnose problems quickly and find out where those bottlenecks are occurring in the infrastructure. So, monitoring the application is just one layer. You also have to have insights into the infrastructure that is hosting your application.
And let's get back to the beginning here. You said there's a pretty extensive modernization going for the users of PNNL. These, tell us, give us some examples. What is it you're working on?
Well, a lot of the applications, like I mentioned before, in terms of finance systems, HR systems, we have our access and control systems, things that set you up for accessing or coming into the organization. And so these processes require a lot of people at the table in terms of making sure we've got the requirements right, but also that we're designing these systems for the users and the way they like to work. So it's really important to get that input early and have them work with you as you develop your plans and designs.
Because the national labs are operated, themselves by a contractor, yet they are federal facilities. So do you have two domains that you have to make sure are accounted for in, say, financial software to meet the federal requirements, but also maybe the requirements of the organization that's operating the lab?
We certainly get requirements that come from multiple places, including those that you mentioned. And so, as we incorporate those, we definitely prioritize the key requirements in our schedule, and we have to be transparent and about and partner when we're going to implement those requirements in the process. So it's a partnership for sure, and it does require you to prioritize some of the more federal requirements in your process. Absolutely.
And looking at the modernization of some of these functions, is there a point in the process at which you make a decision, you know what, it's better if we used a software as a service commercial provider that already is working with this agency or that lab somewhere else and maybe retire what we've developed?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Kind of a build versus buy approach early in the process when you're designing and looking at solutions is key. There's a lot of great software out there that we don't need to replicate. It doesn't make sense to build ourselves. So in those cases, we will go out and look for those products and try to get the right one.
Yeah, I was going to say that you've got not just the, Battelle and the lab, but you've also got the energy department itself. So it's kind of a triple set of organizations to make sure you please.
It can be a diverse set of stakeholders for sure. But I think it's important to get those voices incorporated into the development process at the right time and the right place.